From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, here we go, hour two of our little show. This is Patrick Timpone. Medicine Hunter Chris Killam is with us. And you know what, Chris? I totally lost your bio. What happened to I feel like a really dumb radio host here. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Where do you live? Where do you live?
My wife and I are in the western part of Massachusetts, so we're about 2 hours west of Boston, out in the foothills of the Berkshires.
Well, good for you. Well, tell us about yourself, since I lost your bio in the last 20 minutes. I don't know what happened to it. It just, I think it just got caught in Etherland in Cyberville.
You know, some of these things happen. The machines aren't always our friends. I'm a medicine hunter. I travel all over the world investigating medicinal plants, spices, the so-called superfoods. I spend a lot of time with indigenous native people, and I've done work in India and China and Southeast Asia and all over Africa and the Middle East and the South Pacific and North and South America, and I've had somewhat of a specialty interest in the Amazon, where I've worked about 35 times over the years. And my task is to really bridge cultures and to help to bring good natural remedies to the world.
Well, good for you. Well, when I read that bio, which was a week ago when we set this interview up, that's why I invited you on, because that's a wonderful resume, a pretty wide variety, and certainly of interest to our audience who are into all these different kind of things. Wow. Let's talk about ashwagandha first, because that's what kind of piqued my interest when I first saw the PR person sent me some information on you. I played around with that for many, many years, since I got interested in Ayurveda about 30 years ago. It's a pretty sparky herb. It's a root, isn't it, ashwagandha?
Yeah, ashwagandha is a root, and as you're probably well familiar, in the 5,000-year-old system of Ayurveda, the science of life, which is India's natural medicine system, there are about 7,500 or so herbs that are used, and among them, the one at the top of the pile, the one that's considered the greatest in terms of its benefits, is ashwagandha.
It's been called like the Indian ginseng, Chris, they call it. It's kind of good for libido and stuff like that.
Well, you know, they call it the Indian ginseng, and I sort of understand the sensibility of that. I mean, it's not a ginseng, but it greatly enhances energy and endurance and stamina. It's adaptogenic in that it helps us to adapt to all forms of, you know, physical and mental stress. It enhances testosterone. It's very good for the cardiovascular system, good overall for both men and women in terms of a sexual function and health, memory and cognition. It's really one of those great, great herbs with very broad activity, and it also enjoys a tremendous amount of clinical science to back up its traditional uses.
But so it's an adaptogenic. Does that mean that it actually helps to modulate the immune system in a way, up or down?
Well, it does that, and I'll explain that. You know, a lot of people imagine, as you know, erroneously so, that you just want to boost the immune system. And in fact, if you have a compromised immune system, you want to do that. But if you have an autoimmune disorder in which the immune system might be damaging you, then what you really want to do is to bring that function down. And there are a few, what you just said, immune modulators in nature, substances that if immune function is too high, they bring it down into a normal healthy level. If immune function is too low, bring it up to a normal healthy level. So yes, ashwagandha is one of those, but it's a stress mitigating properties also seem very much due to its capacity to reduce stress hormones, especially cortisol, in the blood. And we know that when you do that, you just wind up reducing stress overall. So it's really kind of a multi-activity route.
That's kind of fun, because if you're talking about something that is kind of put a little more mo in your mojo, but it's and actually on some level of balancing things out, stress and cortisol, that's pretty curious how nature figured that one out.
Well, you know, the difference between pharmaceuticals and herbs is that a pharmaceutical is almost always a single molecule item. So it has one molecule, and usually a molecule that we did not evolve with over time, whereas herbs can have, you know, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800 different compounds in them, all working, you know, in a kind of a synergistic manner on the one hand to keep the plant itself healthy, and as it turns out, very often in our bodies to keep us healthy in diverse ways. So, you know, with this special group of adaptogens, of which ashwagandha is part, as our rhodiola rosea and panax ginseng and a few other herbs, you get this real concentration of overall kind of vitality enhancing activities, you know, reduced stress, better sleep, sharper mind, you know, a boost in sexual function and energy, and just an overall feeling good. And that's one of the reasons I like the category, actually, Patrick, because, you know, so many herbs you don't feel, and you wouldn't expect to. You don't feel echinacea, for example. But with the adaptogens, and notably with ashwagandha, you feel them. And the experience is, you know, relief as the stress kind of drains away, more energy due to the fact that these actually cause our cells to produce more energy, and just a feeling of vitality. You know that experience when you have it.
Yeah. A lot of the Ayurvedic texts talk about, Chris, taking it with, say, warm milk before bed and those kinds of things. Have you found in your research or in your experience that there's the best way to take ashwagandha? People buy it like in a powder or?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I happen to like the extract KSM-66, and I'll tell you why. They really bridge that traditional preparation that you were talking about. They actually make an extract with water and milk, a powdered extract that goes into capsules and tablets. But they figured out, you know, basically, it, rather than expecting you to get some raw ashwagandha root and go home and you know, boil it in buffalo milk, which is the recipe.
That's kind of cool.
They do that for you. So, and they've sponsored about 15 or so really excellent human clinical studies. So, I would say that traditionally, if you're in India and you've got access to, you know, loads of ashwagandha, which can be the case, then, you know, boiling it in fatty buffalo milk as proscribed by the texts is a good thing, and drinking that daily certainly will give you, you know, strength and stamina. But I think for most of us, supplementary form is just plain easier and something that we can do, you know, more regularly in our days and not go, oh no, I have to boil buffalo milk again or whatever.
Well, isn't it curious, you know, all the years I've never even heard this term, KSM-66, but I just went on Amazon and it looks like there's all different kinds of brand names that produce KSM-66. So tell us what it is.
Well, it is an extract. You know, in the world of herbs, you may have, let's say, a single company that does a really good job extracting ginkgo, like Schwabe of Germany. Yeah. They're sort of the ginkgo kings. So you'll find out in the market internationally many, many hundreds of supplement products that contain their ginkgo extract. It's the one that's studied the most, involved in clinical studies, and it happens to be that KSM-66 ashwagandha is in probably about 650 products, not all of them tablets and capsules, some beverages, some bars as well. But I like it because, you know, I think that people expect and deserve regular and consistent benefits no matter what they're taking. Sure. And this really delivers, as you know, to the best of my ability to determine, and I like that.
And what do they do to it exactly? It's how do they jazz it up to get to that that substance that different brand names are using?
Well, what they do is complex, as is typical of herbal extraction, but basically they take, you know, fresh, raw, scrupulously cleaned ashwagandha root, and they chop it up, and they put it into extraction units, which are big giant stainless steel containers, and they they concentrate it down using milk and water, and at the end they have an extract of ashwagandha that's very, very well absorbed and that shows surprisingly good benefits for a variety of health needs in human studies. And you know, when I first got involved with herbs, more than 40 years ago, one of the big criticisms was, well, we don't have any science on that. And even though that wasn't entirely true, it was a constant sticking point. But today, with so many people employing herbs around the world, because they still are the most widely used medicines on earth, we see a massive ocean of science, and this science that KSM-66 has done for ashwagandha, you know, has made a real contribution for this particular herb.
Oh, that's great. I'll pick out a good one on Amazon and we'll put it in our store. This one looks good. Tribe Organics KM66 powder. That looks kind of fun. So it doesn't matter. You could take it in capsules or powder. I'll put one in our store and you all could try it. Now, with ashwagandha, is the kind of female version of that shatavari?
Well, not really. Here's the funny thing. In Asia and throughout the Middle East, there is a reluctance, a comparative reluctance to talk about women's sexuality relative to different herbs as readily as talking about men. And in point of fact, ashwagandha is absolutely superb for women. I know gynecologists and obstetricians in India who give pretty much every woman who walks in the door ashwagandha as a matter of course for overall sexual health and cardiac, you know, cardiovascular health as well, and to reduce stress. So no, it's really an equal opportunity botanical in that regard. There certainly are other very good herbs that are more unique to men or women. You mentioned shatavari, which is asparagus racemosus. That's found also in India and the Himalayas, but it doesn't really compare to the breadth and power of ashwagandha.
Yeah. So the girls would like it too. I wonder if the ladies listening who sometime have some kind of challenges going through menopause with the body's hormones, do you think it helps around that time for ladies?
According to both women with whom I've spoken in India and doctors there, yes, absolutely. I'm quick to say that not everything, you know, works 100% for everybody. I mean, there's just no such thing that works for every single person. But for the most part, we see relief of perimenopausal or menopausal discomfort as a result of taking ashwagandha. And additionally, you know, it's really kind of ironic that periodically, maybe every 2 years or so, we'll see news stories about pharmaceutical companies are going to try out, you know, the next possible female Viagra. And what happens consistently is they try and fail, and these things never make it to market. And yet, this is that. There's a really excellent human clinical study on women and sexual function showing all parameters improved. I mean, pleasure, lubrication, quality of orgasm, relaxation, you know, sensation, the works.
Wow.
Across the board, significant improvement with ashwagandha. So I know that the drug companies have to find that multi-billion dollar patented molecule, and they never will. But in the meantime, for women's sexual function, there's really nothing I know of in the herbal world that comes close to ashwagandha.
We're talking with Chris Killam, fun guy, huh? MedicineHunter.com, his website. And I'm looking at your books. You've written all these books, man. Books on ayahuasca, the five Tibetan rites. Those are fun. Hot plants, psychic delicacies, tales from the medicine trail, OPC, the miracle antioxidant, the Whole Foods Bible, Kava, a cowboy marketing, inner power, in search of the new age. What do? You don't sleep? Take charge of your health? Stalking the wild orgasm? Okay, see, we got your attention. Now, and the complete shopper's guide to natural foods. That's Chris Killam, MedicineHunter.com. Stay there, Chris. And if you have a question for him, we got lots to talk about. We'll talk about some of the herbs he's found around the world. Go down to Brazil, and I want to ask him about two Brazilian herbs that I've been playing around with the last 3 weeks, an interesting experience with a cimento and cumanda he probably knows about, that I had no idea what I was doing and discovered some interesting things. So we have lots to talk about. Join us, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. More with Chris Killam coming up. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these Sir Thrival links take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com. We've known Daniel Vitalis, who heads up Sir Thrival, for 11 years now, and his flagship product, the colostrum, probably one of the best ones in the world. And boy, that's a magical thing for immunity of the gut. And then pine pollen, I've been using pine pollen, I don't know, probably 8-9 years, pretty regularly. And the elk velvet antler, it's a 1-2 punch. As you heard Stephen Buhner, pine pollen's a really remarkable product. The way they do it is just really cool. They're farm raised, they don't put tourniquets on it or drug up the elk or the elk velvet and all the, you know, the elk velvet I'm talking about. They don't drug up the animals to get the elk velvet. Pine pollen, they don't drug the trees. They just collect the pollen and do it. Anyway, they're all in Myron glass, and it's exquisite products, and they have the shaga and the reishi and the fruited body. So it's a very, very well-crafted company that if you're going to spend your money, you might as well go to somebody you know. We've known Daniel forever, and Know the Source is one of our trademarks. Great company. Sir Thrival, a lot of things to shop there.
With prevalent economic uncertainty in the United States economy, many investors are looking for safe havens to protect their wealth. One of the best historic investments in the United States has been the acquisition of physical American gold and silver coins. From the 1790s to the 1930s, the United States government issued American money in the form of gold and silver coins available to the general public. You can reach us at SDL Numismatics at 1-800-878-2646. We'll be happy to educate investors on how to acquire American gold and silver coins. Call us today, 1-800-878-2646. 1-800-246-9646.
And SDL with Fred at the helm now that Andy has left his body 3 or 4 months ago. He's got a couple of really nice specials for you. When you call him, 800-468-2646, and ask about the different specials that he got. And he's putting some different coin collections, you know, in the $4,000 or $5,000 range, and something to be a great thing to kind of jump in if you want to learn more about coins and numismatics. We love numismatics. They have the gold and silver value, but then of course you have the collectible value. Gold is up about $6 today, $13.36 on the bullion market. The stock market is up 53 points. Silver's up another dime, up to $15. And let's see, I bet the dollar is down a little bit. Yep, dollar's down a little bit, and crude oil is down, and that generally is in the same proportion. Dollar goes up, gold goes down, that kind of a thing. 800-468-2646. 800-468-2646. It's a great company. They've been around 35 years or so. SDL. Previously, we talked with Dr. Rulin Zhu about using Pearlseum on your teeth.
You have to experience it. You'll believe it.
Yeah, you do. That's what I've been saying to my listeners. I keep saying, can't even explain this. Just buy it. Just click on it. Buy some. Trust me. Just trust me. And you're going to like the way your teeth look. That's what I keep telling.
Dentists, they did an experiment on their clients, and they literally prove, and they literally show the picture every day. You know, when they take it, in a few days, their tooth literally become, like you said, like a pearl, and it looks so beautiful and really white and shiny. Yeah, it really works, and it's also scientifically proven by the experiment. And he literally proved it is not only good for your teeth, he also proved it's also good for your gum.
Try some of this Pearlseum. I think you're going to love it. You can try it internally as well. Helps with sleep. Great way to get absorbable calcium, and also on your face. You'll see the green ad there, the beautiful green container. Get the capsules or the powder. Pearlseum. Click and order. OneRadioNetwork.com. This is one of the most remarkable things I've ever used to brush my teeth. I've always been real, I don't know, just very picky about how my teeth looked. I don't know. But and you get this real pearl look to it. And these are real pearl that Dr. Rulin Zhu, PhD, out of China, figured out how to make the pearl into a powder without messing up the cellular matrix. So it's pretty magical. The teeth are bone, as you know. And it's actually, I think it's filling in a little bit of porous, that she says, on the teeth to help the remineralization. And then you can use it internally. And pearls also been used for beauty, that I'm going to ask Chris about if he knows some things with pearl in them around the world. Pearlseum, OneRadioNetwork.com.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Talking with a nice fellow, Chris Killam, and his website is MedicineHunter.com. So writing books and stuff like that on your website, you travel around and talk to people about herbs and learn about herbs?
Well, yes.
What a great job you've got, man.
Well, it is really marvelous. I mean, I help to set up trade, you know. Uh-huh. If, for example, a cosmetic company wants, the next remarkable oil or something, I may find that and help them to establish trade in that. And I also, you know, go check out different projects all over. It could be in Morocco, could be in the Peruvian Amazon. It just depends on the mission and the plant. So I am very fortunate to go to a lot of interesting places and meet wonderful people who I don't think I'd ever get the opportunity to meet otherwise if I weren't doing this work.
Yeah. I suspect you find people that are around the world, Chris, that are really doing things authentic, traditional way in growing the herbs and processing them. And must be pretty fun.
Well, it is fun. And yeah, I mean, you know, I spent about 10 years in Vanuatu, South Pacific, which is very remote with kava culture and understanding pretty much everything there is to experience with regard to that relaxing herb there, and, you know, to see how they do it traditionally. I mean, look, the world's changing, you know, everybody's got a sure. cell phone now. I mean, that's just a fact of the matter, but, and drawstring shorts, you know, but on the other hand, there are methods and ways of understanding among many, many Native people around the world that go back a long, long, long time. And I try to learn and understand that as I go along.
I think I've seen that. What's the name of those islands? What'd you call them?
Vanuatu, V-A-N-U-A-T-U. Vanuatu was popularized much, much later than after I got there by that show Survivor, but it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place.
Just pristine islands. I mean, it's pretty, it's just pretty way out there, pretty remote.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I've been fortunate to have terrific experiences there. And the same with the Amazon. I mean, you know, the Amazon is a rapidly changing place. And there are thousands of natural medicines we may never know about because of the extreme loss of forest on an ongoing basis. But, you know, I've had a lot of great experiences with Native people of different tribal groups there. And it's been, you know, pretty remarkable to get to do this for a living. Uh-huh. I pinch myself.
if you were forced to go out to some island that had nothing except sand and water and a few trees and coconut trees, and you could only take one herb with you, right? This was, you know, on a game show. What would you take?
Oh, that's tough.
It would probably not fair question.
Well, no, it would probably either be ashwagandha, which we were speaking about uh-huh. earlier, or rhodiola rosea, which is similar in its benefits, and something I've also, you know, investigated in Siberia and in the Tian Shan Mountains of northwestern China. Both make you feel really good. Both give you a lot of strength and energy and stamina, and help to reduce stress. So I would say those would be the two choices.
Yeah, I've never really experienced rhodiola. Talk a little bit about that, and are there certain any brands you can recommend, or is there certain processes that are better than others when you buy rhodiola?
Well, rhodiola rosea is one of those herbs that the Chinese emperors thousands of years ago, who were in, you know, Beijing, so entirely on the eastern side of China, would send search parties out to the farthest northwestern part of China, so thousands of miles away, to retrieve this treasure, this plant treasure for the emperors. And we know that, you know, rhodiola, it's a root like ashwagandha. It comes more from altitude than from lowland places. You know, it endures very harsh winters. And it's funny, in the 50s, the Russians, through their Olympic athlete program, used a few adaptogenic herbs, rhodiola rosea and Eleuthero, which some people call Siberian ginseng, right, and Panax ginseng. And it was considered treason to share this information outside of the Russian training program because it was an unquestionable edge in athletic performance. You know, rhodiola just plain makes you feel great. I mean, I've been using rhodiola daily, oh, I don't know, for about 30 years or so.
Is that right? And,
yeah. You know, I like to take the adaptogens, Patrick. I have a very demanding job, a lot of travel, a lot of jet travel, inconsistent hours, and, you know, meals away from home. And I find that these adaptogenic herbs like ashwagandha and rhodiola help me to stay strong and stay healthy.
Can you give us an idea that the dosage that you've been taking? Everybody's different, of course, depending on your weight, right, and everything, but just in general, what folks could look at playing with rhodiola?
Yeah, human clinical studies show that between about 200 and 600 milligrams of extract per day is a great dose. And you know, I sort of recommend about 400 of a, what would be known as a standardized extract. And you had asked earlier about brands. Yeah. I think that Nature's Way makes a very good standardized extract Rhodiola rosea capsule product.
Oh, good.
Something I've used a lot. And, you know, I mean, I have high regard for them. I like what they do. They seem to really do it clean and well. And I've known them for a long, long time. And that's the, you know, if I'm going to use a rhodiola in a capsule, that's the one I'm going to use.
Oh, it's a great company. And they have good prices, right? They have good prices. Great company. Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, we'll put that in the store. Do you take that a couple times a day, the rhodiola?
No, I usually just take my supplements once a day in kind of a big massive fistful at one time rather than it's you know, I don't want to have to think about doing it twice.
Yeah,
that's the truth. Yeah.
Do you have issues just for fun going through different airports and all kinds of security with bringing herbs with you? Is that a challenge around the world?
Well, it's not a challenge in terms of will I get through, but it is sometimes funny. You know, I've brought in, for example, like an entire suitcase full of tree bark, and you know, when you get to customs, it'll say, you know, I am not bringing, you know, I say yes I am, you know, and then I get sent over to agricultural inspection and then open up the bag and, you know, they look and I look and there's this awkward moment and then they say, what's that? And I pause and then say, tree bark. And it kind of goes like this for a while, but basically the deal is that if something is dried, then unless it is either on the endangered list, which is called the CITES list, or it's an illegal drug, you know, cannabis or something like that, it's completely legal to bring plant materials into the United States. So, you know, I make sure that what I bring in is clean, no soil, because soil's a problem due to microbes that might harm U.S. crops. But, yeah, it makes for some funny scenes, and, you know, it's just part of the nature of the work that I do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you've studied kava for a long time. Personally, I've never really experienced much of it at all. They have some kava bars. I live about an hour outside of Austin, where you have all these kava drinks. What kind of herb, where does it come from, and why do people take it?
Well, kava comes from the South Pacific. It actually originates from the islands of Vanuatu, but it has spread over history throughout, you know, Tahiti and the Society Islands and Hawaii and New Guinea and New Caledonia and Fiji and Tonga and Samoa and all over the Pacific. And it is the root of a pretty good sized bush that takes about, five or more years to grow. And it is a fundamentally relaxing plant. The root is pounded and made into a drink with water. It's not heated, it's not fermented, it's just the root is pounded up and mixed with water, and then you drink that usually out of a coconut shell. And the relaxing effect, the tranquility promoting effect, is almost instantaneous.
Really?
Yeah, within a few seconds of drinking it, you feel it going through your body, and it's very, very pleasant. And, you know, it doesn't scramble your ability to think or anything like that, but it is profoundly relaxing. And it's, you know, it's an agent of kinship and community in the South Pacific. Everybody gets together in the afternoon and at late afternoon and drinks kava for a while before, you know, going off to have dinner and being with their families. And if you were to go to a wedding or you go to visit a chief or something, you would bring kava roots with you as a wonderful gift. So it's very important to the Pacific Islands. And you know, human studies show that it's beneficial for reducing mild to moderate anxiety very well. And as a relaxant, what I like about kava is it's so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a capsule of kava extract is not going to be as fast or as powerful as coconut shell full of freshly squeezed and mixed kava. But the tranquility promoting benefits of kava, you know, they're the reason that a lot of people stash little bottles of fluid kava extract in their you know, desk drawers at work. So, oh, I got to go into a stressful meeting, I, you know, like do a little hit of kava first, and it does work actually quite wonderfully. That's well.
So do you, our listeners, if they want to experiment with that, do they look again for a standardized extract of kava in a particular product, a tincture or a capsule?
Well, you know, there are two brands that I really like in this regard. One is Gaia Herbs,
sure.
and the other is Herb Farm, Gharm. They're both great. They both make a lot of liquid extract products. And without question, the speed, you know, and the feeling of kava is better with a liquid extract than it is with a capsule or tablet. So I would go for either one of those companies, Gaia or Herb Farm, and try out their liquid extract and experience the, you know, the very rapid, relaxing, you know, anxiolytic effects for yourself.
Can you drive or operate heavy machinery, as they say, with kava?
Oh, yes. You can. You can. I mean, in the islands, you know, when they really get cranking, which happens sometimes in the evening, you know, then no, you might not want to get behind the wheel for a while after having, say, five good solid coconut shells worth of kava. But that's entirely more than anybody would possibly consume with a supplementary form.
But it doesn't, like you say, it's not really, doesn't really scramble your brain like some maybe hallucinogenics or alcohol or something. It's more just a really relaxing the nervous system.
Well, it relax. You know, if you walk around with tense shoulder muscles after you drink kava or take kava, your shoulder muscles will relax. If you, you know, if you're just sort of going on a constant current of, you know, mild to moderate anxiety, you may find, you know, after, you know, drinking kava that you don't feel anxious at all. You feel just fine and normal and clear. But if you drink a massive amount, as does happen sometimes in the island, then because it is also a muscle relaxant, it just may make you to, like, you just might not want to get behind the wheel of a car, period. Just like, no, I'm going to wait an hour before I do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that would be the wise choice, obviously. If you ever feel that you can't drive, don't drive.
Chris Killam is with us. It's Kilham. He's got lots of interesting books. His website is cool, medicinehunter.com. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Open phone Friday tomorrow. If you like to be on the show, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I had a kind of an interesting experience with two Brazilian herbs that a doctor friend of mine recommended I take just to see if I had any Herxheimer effect and to test to see if I had any Lyme buggies running around. And he suggested I do Cimento and Cumanda, and I think they're both from Brazil. Are you familiar with those herbs?
Cimento and Cumanda. The problem with, okay, Cumanda, right, that's Campsiandra and Gustifolia.
Right. That's it. Oh, so these are the more commercial names I'm giving you.
Yeah, they also call it Guacapurana. You know, yeah, it's used for fever. It's used as a tonic. It's the bark. I've seen it in the market, but I've never really had any involvement with it. So
I see.
You know, but one of the things you'll find is that these botanicals tend to have, you know, a zillion names.
Right. Yeah. This one is Nutrimedic Cimento, but it's really cat's claw.
Well, okay, Cimento, Cimento, right. Cat's claw, Uncaria tomentosa. I know a lot about cat's claw. I've worked with it for decades in the Amazon, and it's one of the best anti-inflammatory herbs that we have.
Oh.
You know, it is tremendous for reducing inflammation of all types. It's pretty powerful that way. If you have been sick and you need to recover, then, you know, cat's claw can really help you to recover very well. It's very good for immune function overall. You know, it's probably the single most popular botanical remedy in the Amazon overall.
Really? Wow.
Oh yeah. It demonstrates some anti-cancer properties, and in Austria, it's actually an adjunct drug for the treatment of reproductive cancers.
Very curious. Uncaria
tomentosa.
Tomentosa, right. That's what it says on the label here, on the one right. We have in our store. And this fellow works a lot with lime, and I think it's part of their lime protocol, the Kumanda and the Cemento. So it must be antimicrobial.
Well, yes, it is. Mm. It is. It's, you know, these remedies from the Amazon have to protect plants from invasion from all kinds of things, you know, fungus and yeast and mold and parasites and bugs and on and on and on. And so these plants develop all these compounds which have significant activity in the plants from a protective standpoint, and in our bodies very much so. So yeah, if you're fighting parasites, if you're fighting off some sort of a, you don't know what it is, but you don't feel well, if you need to get your immune system back in order, if you need to reduce inflammation and pain, detoxify your body, cat's claw is great. And I do like to drink the prepared liquid infusion in the Amazon, but really it's infinitely easier to have an encapsulated product here in the U.S.
Yeah. I had an interesting experience with it. The doc suggested I take some Cemento and Kumanda and work up to 60 drops a day of each, and if I didn't feel terrible, that means I didn't have Lyme. He said, that's a cheap way to know without taking a Lyme test. I said, well, that's cool. So I did it, Chris, and then about 2 or 3 days after I got to 60 drops, I started busting out with, I could tell because I've seen it before, candida fungus coming out in my foot and on my hip, just popping out. So it must be antifungal as well.
Yes, it is. Huh. You know, fungus is a big, big deal in the Amazon rainforest, as in all rainforests, because of the wet, the fusion of fungus. So yeah, you know, a lot of these plants develop these antifungal compounds, and cat's claw actually is the inner bark of a vine. And the reason it's called cat's claw is that the plant itself, as it grows, it develops these claws that look very much like the claws of a cat, and those allow the plant to kind of catch on to other plants or trees and then grow up from there, because you know the plant is trying to reach the sun. So it's quite an ingenious plant, and it's the inner bark that is the medicinal part of the whole thing.
Yeah. I wonder if you've ever thought about this. I often like to contemplate these kind of questions. I wonder how nature or God, whatever you want to call it, divine spirit that creates kind of everything, came up with the herb maybe at the same time when the disease was created by humans, or before, or do you know what I'm asking? It's like, how is this possible? I mean, you know, it's just, we're all connected, right? And the whole thing is all inextricably tied together. Do you have any theories on that?
Well, in terms of causation, I don't really have a theory, but what I do think is that, as nature has proliferated from just, you know, the most basic single cell organisms to the complexity and diversity that we've seen at its peak, and certainly we're on a decline now due to loss of species, but billions and billions and billions of interconnected ecological niches have been filled. So it only makes sense that if there's a disease, let's say Lyme, that there would be something in the world that would be beneficial for the treatment of that due to, you know, some unique properties that really have to do with the plant benefiting itself. And you know, how we have this sort of endless historic treasure hunt to find different things and go, oh, okay, that works, you know. Oh, okay, you look at all of the herbal studies that have been done on Alzheimer's disease, and the single one that shows any significant promise, interestingly enough, is with saffron. And you go back through the historic references and they talk about saffron for dementia, and you go, okay, you know, somehow even in antiquity, at least some people knew to take this really rare, you know, as precious as gold spice for brain function if you had certain symptoms. And
saffron,
It's amazing, really. It's remarkable.
Yeah. And I know, boy, you can really spend up for saffron, can't you? I mean, if you really want to, it can get pretty pricey.
Oh, it costs a little bit more than gold by weight, yes. Yes.
That's crazy. Boy, this is so much fun to talk. Talk about, just in general, this whole thing. Well, I got to cut. Let me do some emails here so I make sure we get these before I go off on another subject. This is from Clarice. Would you ask your guest if he knows of any safe herbal tinctures or capsules, preferably tinctures, that I could give my dog to help to boost its immune system as an adaptogen, kind of ongoing? Does he know anything about that?
Well, interestingly enough, there have been two dog studies with ashwagandha extract, with KSM-66, what we were talking about earlier. And in both instances, you know, the dogs had lower levels, lower blood levels of stress hormones after they'd taken it for a little while. So, you know, I would say ashwagandha, if you can get ashwagandha in a liquid form and just put some of it in the dog's food, mm-hmm. or however you want to do that, we already know that it works as it does in people that way.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's the only one you've seen that's had some science on the canines.
Well, you know, it's what I've seen, but I'm quick to say that there is a whole field of veterinary herbalism, and I'm not as up to speed on it as I could be. There are some people who really focus their careers on it. So it may be, for example, that lemon balm or some of the other calming herbs also might show really good efficacy. I just don't know that.
So ashwagandha may work, Chris, because you lower the stress levels, then the immune system is just happier.
Right,
and just in general, right?
Yeah, I mean, stress hormones compromise our immune system, and if the stress hormones are too high, we can have serious functional difficulties from an immune standpoint. So, you know, and that cycles back to what you were talking about everything being completely interconnected. We can't separate a function within us from all the other functions within us.
Here's an email from Manuel. Can your guest speak of any of the liver issues I've read associated possibly with drinking kava in the traditional form? I've noticed when I drink the kava at a kava bar, I get a cold feeling and libido reduces. It's a very relaxing drink, by the way. I tend to drink about 4 or 5 coconut shells, but it reduces libido for Manuel and he gets a cold feeling.
Well, okay. There was about 20 years ago a false report blaming the deaths of 21 people in Europe on kava due to liver toxicity.
Oh, my goodness.
And it took a couple of teams of researchers working for quite a long time to go through every shred of this and basically disprove it. Kava's been safely drunk for thousands of years in quantities much larger than we'll ever drink it. But it is the case that the above ground parts of the plant should not be used. It's only the root that's used, and native people will only use the root. Some companies have used above ground parts of kava, and that we know that there can be problems with the liver with that. But with kava root extract, just the real thing, there's no concern for it. In terms of why you get cold, I don't know. I mean, in the case of the person who wrote in, perhaps it lowers their body temperature a little bit. I'd suspect that's what happens. But also with reduction in libido, it's a muscle relaxant. If you're trying to go for, like, you know, absolute erectile function, kava is not what you turn to. It's going to have the opposite effect. And but conversely, women who drink kava find that they are more relaxed for sex, and for many women, there's a lot of tension or anxiety around sex, and so that relaxing effect, while not helpful for men, can be quite helpful for women.
Excellent. Here is an email from Tom in New York. I have a little low thyroid. I just don't want to take any of the thyroid medicines, regardless of how natural they are. Does your guest have any ideas of some herbs I could take to maybe just an overall help my thyroid function better?
Well, you certainly kelp tablets, simple, very inexpensive kelp tablets. All kelp tablets are standardized to, 0.15 micrograms of iodine or something like that, which is helpful for the thyroid. And additionally, and I have no human clinicals to back this up, but I've been getting quite a few reports on improved thyroid function as a result of drinking plenty of celery juice.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, at very least, drinking a lot of celery juice is going to do you zero harm. And if the reports are accurate, it may do you a lot of good in this area.
And celery juice is the fad now, right? Everybody's drinking celery juice.
Yeah, everybody's doing celery juice. And I have actually...
I like it too. I've done it. Have you?
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, you do celery, carrot, celery, ginger, you know, all combos. I mean, by itself, I'm pretty indifferent to it by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, certainly as part of an overall elixir, it's great stuff.
Yeah. Here's Comfrey. Here's an email for you. Let's see. Does your guest use Comfrey for anything internally or topically? Internally or topically?
Well, when I was in my 20s, I used to go around the neighborhood and find fresh young comfrey where it grew in people's yards and clip it and take it home and steam it and put olive oil and salt and lemon on it and eat it because I found it delicious. But in terms of topical remedies, comfrey is really widely used in many of the balms and the you know, different salves that are kind of sort of standard herbal salves, and you know, we know that it has some significant healing properties in terms of, you know, what it can do for skin. It seems to help to repair damaged skin kind of nicely. And it can be put into a balm or an ointment very well. And you could even take fresh comfrey and grind it up and do a poultice if you needed to, you know, heal an area on your skin. That is actually like taking a big handful of smushed up comfrey and applying it to that area, maybe wrapping it up and just letting it sit for a while.
Theo writes in, does your guest know any herbs that help to build muscle?
To help to build muscle?
Interesting question.
Yes. There is, I've got it right here, actually. There is a Siberian herb, and I'm struggling for the name. That's why I'm buying time.
That's all right. Take your time. We got time. We're talking with Chris Killam, and K-I-L-H-A-M. His website is medicinehunter.com. Medicinehunter.com. He's got some really cool books, some stuff on Taoism, sexuality stuff, inner power. Really cool things here. OPC, we didn't even get to that. We'll have to have him back and talk about some of this other stuff. We didn't even get to ayahuasca or cannabis. Maybe we'll touch on it quickly before we go. How about the Siberian herb you find?
You know, I'm really struggling. I hate it when something just drops out of my head. But I investigated this while in Siberia many years ago. I'll think of it after we're long gone from this.
Well,
I suspect I suspect.
Yeah, shoot me an email, will you? Then I'll put it on the show page if you remember it. But it was an herb that helps to build muscle. I've never really heard of any.
Well, actually, spinach.
Spinach.
The whole Popeye thing is based on the value of beta ectosone in spinach, and beta ectosone we know is a muscle builder. I mean, it's actually a banned substance.
Oh, really? Oh, because they try to synthesize it, and so the bodybuilders just shoot it up or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, in concentration, it can be found, and
beta-ectosone.
In the blood, so I know in the doping, it's against the anti-doping laws, but spinach actually does that.
So, what do you make of all the different superfoods? I mean, of course, I guess about the last 20 years have really been the onset of things like cacao and goji berries, schizandra. What are some of the other ones? Maca. Do you see these around the world? Do people use these? And talk a little bit about it.
Well, I've been deeply involved with maca since, for about 21 years now in the Peruvian Andes. I've worked very, very closely with maca producing communities and the maca trade. And yeah, maca, the superfoods are really so named because they're just particularly concentrated in nutrients and maybe some unusual nutrients. I mean, maca, among other things, is famous for really boosting libido. It is very nourishing. It has a lot of protein in it. It has a good mineral value. It has some interesting fatty acids in it. And overall, it's a great, great food. We see the same thing, for example, with acai, from the Amazon. I've been involved with acai for, 23 years or so. And that, as a purple fruit, it's super high in antioxidant value, tastes really good. It's nutrient, very, very dense. These foods I think the popularization of them, first of all, has been very, very good for communities who, now can make a good living with these, but also in terms of giving us real super health imbuing agents that are not only good for us, but thank goodness they're also great tasting.
Yeah, the maca tastes pretty good, kind of like a butterscotch kind of thing, and there's some good companies out there. So you sound like you experiment a lot traveling around. Is there any issues for you if you do like maca, ashwagandha, kava, or some of the other things all together in the same day?
Well, not really. I mean, if for example you felt too hopped up or something, then back off. But in general, you can have a maca shake, let's say, with some of the pollen. I heard you talking about pollen.
You're
going to have some pollen in there, have some other things in there, blend it all up, get that down, make sure to get your rhodiola and ashwagandha in during the day, and whatever else, maybe you have a nice bowl of acai later on in the afternoon. That's all good. It's all good. The ideal idea of nutrition is to get as much concentrated nutrient value as you possibly can per gram of food. That's why, kale and collard greens and all the other greens are so beneficial, because they're just almost entirely nutrients.
Let's take this phone call before. Good morning. On the phone, who's this?
Hello, Patrick and Chris. This is Robert.
Hi. Hi, Robert.
Well, me and Patrick's on the same wavelength. He asked a question right before me, so I guess I'll give a testimonial. My question was the same as his. What happens if you take all of these? Well, I'm kind of a maniac. This morning, I took some red ginseng. I ground up some of the powder. And when I heard you talking, I took two of the KSM 66 capsules, and later on I may take rhodiola, and I'm just trying to get my out of the dirt.
Just more energy.
So really,
yeah.
I take them all, no problem, huh?
No problem.
No, it is not a problem. These things are fundamentally good for us. I mean, I would caution you if you were consuming a whole bunch of, powerfully medicinal plants that, let's say, were specifically for parasites or something. You can certainly overdo that, but you can't really overdo the super nutrients.
Superfoods. Go ahead, Robert. Go ahead. No, you go.
One last thing with the ashwagandha. I read somewhere, you talked about good effects, any side effects. I've read somewhere that ashwagandha may interrupt with the thyroid or something like that. Anything you found out anywhere?
Well, I actually have not. I've heard that myself, but I don't have any evidence of it. So I have to be cautious. I really don't know of that occurring, and certainly in the science literature that I keep an eye on, I haven't seen that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Robert.
Oh, Patrick, I can give you the answer. It's Rapunticum carthamoides. That's the herb from Siberia that's used to build muscle.
Okay, so you're going to have to spell that for me, man.
Yeah, it's Rhapunticum. So Rapunticum, and the species name is Carthamoides, which is Carthamoides. And this is the great muscle building plant of Siberia, and some of the bodybuilding companies are switched on to this.
So you can actually find this as a capsule or a tincture?
You should be able to find Rapunticum carthamoides out there.
How would we know if we're getting a good one? Is it standard? Is that term, Chris, standardized extract, valuable? Does it mean something?
Well, it does mean something. The problem is that any company can really lie if they wish to. And that's why, if you can ever get something, let's say, from a company like Nature's Way or Gaia or some of the others that are reliable and have been around for a long time and people get good results from, you're always better than some company you have never heard of before.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of these foods that we're talking about, they're just kind of part of the daily fare, or generally, whether it be kava and things like this, right? Just in other parts of the world, and they might seem like superfoods to us, but I know cacao, people have a lot of cacao drinks down in Central America, and it's called food of the gods down there, isn't it?
Well, yes, and in fact, I've investigated the Kuna native people in the San Blas Islands who live on cacao. Basically, they live on a hot chocolate drink. That is the food they survive on because they're too poor to have anything else. And they drink about 5 cups of really, really thick cacao. Ooh. That's cooked with water and banana every day. And they've been the subject of medical studies for decades now, because among the Kuna people who follow that dietary habit, they have no heart attack, strokes, high blood pressure, or forms of 16 common types of cancer. So it's really been kind of eye-opening, very much the way the Greenland Eskimos with their super high concentration of omega-3s don't have heart disease.
So what do they mix down with the cacao? What do they mix it with in these drinks?
Well, take a great big pot of water, and they throw in some ripe bananas for thickness and for sweetening, and they just cook them and beat them up, and then they add the cacao that's been all ground up, and they stir that for a good long time, and when they're done, they have a chocolate drink that is really as thick as gravy, very, very good tasting, and it's their primary food.
Isn't that interesting? Bananas and chocolate.
Yeah. And by the way, I looked up, just while we were going on here, I looked up online. You will also find Rapunticum, the muscle building herb, as marl root. That is M-A-R-A-L. I found a marl root product online on Amazon. I know a little bit about this company. Looks pretty good, but you can definitely get it. You can definitely get it.
What's the one that looks pretty good? Just the name of it for fun.
Yeah, the company is Barlow's Herbal Elixirs, and they've got a marl root extract, 500 milligrams in capsules. And, you know, I don't know that you'll be doing the Tarzan yell if you start taking this, but at least the people I spent time with at the Central Siberian Botanical Garden said that this was the real deal.
Cool. Oh, Chris, you're fun to talk to. I'm glad we hooked up. Just, I don't even
Thanks.
Know. Yeah, okay. really did. Your website is medicinehunter.com. It's got a lot of books there, just a whole ton of books. And maybe we can come back sometime and just do ayahuasca, cannabis, and some other that genre sometime.
I think that would be a total gas.
Yeah.
You ask great questions, and I would love to do that anytime.
Oh, cool. And where are you off to now? Are you off traveling?
Well, yeah, actually, I'll present on ashwagandha and sports at an upcoming conference in about a week in Amsterdam. I just got back in 2 days ago from Spain, where I was presenting on a long ayahuasca project I'd done in the Peruvian Amazon. But it's always someplace, you know, either some project in the field or reporting on the projects in the field.
So you think that your diet and all these foods and superfoods help you manage the whatever stress there is flying around the world? I mean, whenever I fly somewhere, I feel like I've been beaten up with it's hard.
Oh, yeah. And the bad news is it just gets worse. It gets less comfortable. It gets more crowded. The air seems crappier.
Oh, I know. Oh, you mean the air, the actual experience. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, flying used to be kind of fun old days. You dressed up, you got on a plane, you tried to catch a lounge seat, you talked with people, it was festive.
Yeah.
Now it's just this sort of, you know, grim conveyance from one place to another, and you hope not to fall from the sky.
I'll always remember, I'll tell my grandkids someday, first plane I was on was 1965, and I went to boot camp in the Navy. And,
wow.
You know, they treated you like you were, I mean, holy cow, it's like, oh, okay. And they have the meals with the linen and the silverware and coach, right? And boy, it's changed a lot since then, hasn't it? My goodness.
Yeah, it's all plastic forks and stuff that you don't recognize.
And peanuts. Yeah, I have a peanut here. What's in this peanut? I don't know, just have it. All right, Chris, thanks a lot.
Peanut.
It was great fun talking to you. We'll stay in touch.
Well, thanks so much, Patrick. You take really good care. Appreciate being on your show very much.
Thank you, sir. You too. MedicineHunter.com. Boy, it's a fun guy, man. What a great job. Let's do that when we grow up. MedicineHunter.com, Chris Killam. Look at some of these books, man. Take charge of your health. Now, I like this one, too. Stalking the Wild Orgasm. Man, I want to get this one. The Complete Shopper's Guide to Natural Foods in Search of the New Age, Inner Power. Man, good stuff. A lot of books. Well, he's on an airplane. You just write books, right? All right, kids, I'll see you tomorrow. I love you all very much. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for your ongoing support. We have Know This Source is our trademark, as you know. And so all of the products that we promote, we're very persnickety about them. You know, the Daniel Vitalis and Shen Blossom and Ken Rolla and, the Sulfur and all the cool things, the Sauna, a Rebounder, and, you know, all of them, the Aloe. We know the people. We've worked with them for years. We know that they're good products. We use them all. Almost everything in our store that I've tried or have used or have at home. So we don't put anything in our store that we're not familiar with. And like I'll add a few of these things that Chris brought up, put it in our store. So go to our store, shop around if you're going to spend your money. Other than that, just buy your wife or your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Buy them some food and don't worry about buying anything. And just live on love and do a lot of kissing and you'll be fine. And you don't need to buy anything. Did I just say that? Yeah, I did. See you tomorrow with open phones.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.